I want to turn now and think a little bit about that reading from Hosea. Let us know, let us press on to know the Lord. And then, for I desire love, steadfast love, not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. Well, that's quite an important statement from Hosea, and arguably among the most important in the Old Testament, because we've just heard Jesus quoting it. And anything Jesus quotes must be important. Jesus knew his Bible very well, backwards and forwards. He was a good Jew and a rabbi. He most often quoted the Psalms or the prophets. He rarely quoted from Genesis or the books of history. And if he quoted from Leviticus, it was in derision. Leviticus is that enormous collection of laws which the Jews were supposed to follow, and included what they would have to do if they broke any of the laws, the sacrifices they would need to make in order to be right with God. So very important stuff. So for Hosea to say that God wasn't interested in their sacrifices, and for Jesus to quote this, was a very serious business. Keeping the law was everything to the Jews. They had their Big Ten, as we just remembered in our quiz, which Moses brought down from the mountain. They're great laws. I've got a new Ten Commandment joke for you. A Sunday school teacher was discussing the Ten Commandments with their 6 and 7 year olds. And after explaining the commandment to honor thy father and mother, she asked, is there a commandment that teaches us how to treat our brothers and sisters? One little boy raised his hand and shouted out, yes, miss, thou shalt not kill. Anyway, Moses gave the people God's Ten Commandments. But to many, those 10 general rules weren't specific again. So heaps more laws had to be written to make those 10 more precise. But unless you knew the law very well, it was easy to break it. And if you did, the fear was that God might punish you in a very tangible way. Your crops might fail or your children fall ill. So the belief that making a sacrifice to God of a lamb or a dove or a calf might stave off punishment was very powerful. And it's, of course, what was happening in all the other religions of ancient time. It also, incidentally, was very good business for the temple. The slaughtered animals provided the priests with their dinner, the excess was sold on, and the money earned through the purchase of animals on site sustained the whole temple enterprise. But Jesus, like the prophets before him, was dead set against this practice, because they knew God doesn't work like this. Humans might demand reparations, but God doesn't. Our ways are not God's ways. As the psalmist Riley noted, God doesn't need sacrifices. He already owns all the beasts of the field and the birds of the air. If he needed a dinner, he wouldn't tell them. The psalmist there is giving us a little giggle. And if you ever wondered if God has a sense of humor, there it is. But humor notwithstanding, our way of thinking is not God's way. Happily, those sacrifices came to an end when the temple was destroyed for the last time in 70 AD. And now none of the Abrahamic faiths practice sacrifice. But lest we get too smug about this, it wouldn't be difficult to apply Jesus' objections to practices of the temple to practices of the church. I have a little series of books on my shelf called The Complete Guide to the Church for Bored Again Christians. And one of the books is 101 Things to Do with a Dull Church. And on the cover is a cartoon of a bishop using his robes to parachute into the pulpit. Another volume in this series is 101 Things to Do During a Dull Sermon. Things like twiddle your thumbs, twiddle your neighbor's thumbs, get everybody in the row to twiddle their thumbs, or scowl and vigorously shake your head at everything the preacher says and see how red he gets. Or another one, and I really like this one, I tried it actually. Take out your hanky and blow your nose, varying the pressure exerted on each nostril so you can trumpet out your favorite hymn. I tried it with Onward Christian Soldiers. It's really good. Anyway, there's also another book in this series. It's a book called 101 Things That Jesus Never Said. Things like cleanliness is next to godliness. I'm really glad Jesus didn't say that. Jesus also never said, "What I like about religion is all the rules and regulations." Jesus never said, "In an emergency, call in your nearest doctrine." And Jesus never said, "My straitjacket, I leave with you." I'm a cradle Methodist. I love the Methodist Church with all my heart. But many of the things we hold so dear are not on God's agenda at all. And they're a huge distraction from our principal task of knowing God. So I don't believe God gives a toss about our committees or our conferences or our panels or our hierarchies or our doctrines or even our Methodist discipline. I haven't mentioned our hymn singing, because I think God loves our hymn singing, as he loves our prayer meetings and our Bible studies and our fellowship groups and our youth clubs and our outreach activities. It only loves them insofar as they help us toward the knowledge of God. So as Hosea exhorts us, let us press on to know the Lord. It was in the 1970s that I made my first earnest attempt to know the Lord. I was raised a Christian when I was in my 30s. I had one of those born-again experiences. And after time, I thought I needed to do something with this wonderful new understanding of faith that I had. So I started to pray, to ask God what he wanted me to do. But I didn't get any answers. So I thought I mustn't be praying right. So I got a book out of the library called How to Pray. There were 8 chapters and 8 different ways to pray. But they all said the same sort of thing. You can't pray successfully unless you know God. So I took that book back to the library and got another book out called Knowing God. And I got a little way into it, but I didn't like what I was reading. It didn't accord with my admittedly quite new experience of God. So I looked at where the author's information came from, and it was all from the Bible. And I thought, I can read the Bible for myself. I don't need this guy. So I took the book back to the library and got out my Bible and read it cover to cover. And what a fantastic, wonderful experience. Interesting, I learned the other day that not everyone can have this experience. My newspaper reported that in 3 states in America, Utah, Missouri, and parts of Texas, the Bible has been removed from school libraries because it seems there's too much sex and violence in it. Sex and violence, I mean, who knew? Gosh. Well, in spite of all that sex and violence, it is a fabulous book. Through it you hear God's voice, as well as many other voices, and you learn to distinguish one from the other. Through it you see God at work, as well as lots of other people at work doing the things they thought were God's work. And again, you learn to distinguish between them. So on I went, but when I got to the end of Revelation, amazing and wonderful though the experience was, I realized I knew a lot more about God, a lot more about what other people thought of God. But as for me, knowing God personally for myself, I'd only inched along, and I still didn't know what God wanted me to do. I was beginning to discover that knowing God is about more than studying the Bible. And it was when I picked up another book, a medieval book of meditation called The Cloud of Unknowing, that's when the penny dropped. God is unknowable through any path of logic or reason or book learning or sacrifices. The only path that bears fruit is a path that isn't logical or discernible by study, and that is the path of love. Hosea isn't talking about knowing through the brain, but knowing through the heart. In the same way as you get to know your friends, you get to know your soulmates, as you get to know your beloved. And that kind of knowledge comes through establishing a relationship and devoting yourself to it. It comes through love. And in fact, Hosea gives this away in the very verse we're discussing. The main device of Hebrew poetry, which this is called parallelism, where the same thing is said twice in two different ways, with the two ideas expanding each other. So here, the knowledge of God and burnt offerings is paired with steadfast love and not sacrifice. I desire steadfast love, not sacrifice. The knowledge of God, not burnt offering. Knowledge of God is acquired through steadfast love. And that love can only develop as we grow our relationship, our friendship with God, talking to Him, listening for Him. And this gets me back to where my quest began, back to prayer, and to the great foundations of discipleship, prayer and Bible study. But building the knowledge of God, the love of God, isn't just about Him and me talking to each other. There's yet another element in our journey to know God. When people try to test Jesus' knowledge of the law, they ask Him which law is the most important. And you're all such good Bible scholars that you'll remember Jesus puts the question back to the questioner. And you remember His answer. The most important commandment is...
love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, thy soul, thy mind, and thy strength.
And thy neighbor as thyself. The one that follows on is really essential. Because that second one flows from the first because it is a test of how well we're accomplishing the first. Because if our love of God doesn't include loving our neighbor, it's not the real thing. Having suggested that God is beyond logic, I'm going to have to use logic to unpick this point, but just bear with me. I'm a bit like a vicar I heard of who left his notes on the pulpit one Sunday. The cleaner found them, and in them she saw his stage directions for his sermon. At the top of the page it said, introduction, smile, make eye contact, and look friendly. A bit further on, sad bit, knit eyebrows, wipe eyes, speak softly. Then, challenging bit, lift finger, point, lean over pulpit. And then finally, woolly bit, shout very loudly, thump pulpit, sound convinced. We all have our woolly bits, and this is my woolly bit. So here goes. Loving God must lead to loving our neighbor if it's the real thing, because God is love. And because God, who is love, created us and everything about us, love is therefore in the very fiber of our beings. God, love is in each of us. So if we love God in God's entirety, then we must love one another, because each of us carries God stroke love within us. We must love God who created us, who's all around us, and God who is in our best friend, and God who is in our worst enemy, and in every other human being. That is what knowing God means, loving Him and all humanity. Well, that's my wooliest thought for the day, but I hope it makes sense. Friends, God doesn't ask us to get theological degrees or a lot of book learning, however helpful they might be. He doesn't ask us to build churches and repair roofs and dream up liturgies and doctrines, however helpful they might be. He doesn't ask us to hold conferences or ordain presbyters and deacons, however helpful they might be. All God asks of us is that we love Him and love one another. All God asks of us is steadfast love. So, dear friends, let us press on. Press on to know, to love the Lord until we finally meet Him face to face. Amen.